Whenever I visit France, I always see lots of top bottles for sale, but when I get back home, those same bottles can be much harder to find, if not impossible. That's why I use idealwine.com. At idealwine.com, I can buy wines directly from France for delivery directly to my home. They have new auctions every week, and the fixed price selection is equally awesome. Clos Vougeard, Chateau Reyes, and Ulysse Collan, as well as many more greats from all over France, are regularly available on the website. Best of all, it is simple and hassle-free to buy them. Ideal Wine handles all the customs and logistics hurdles for you and for me. Wines are ordered with a couple of clicks, and then they arrive. It is simple. Check out idealwine.com for more information. That's idealwine.com to find what you'd like to be drinking.
I'll Drink to That, where we get behind the scenes of the beverage business. I'm Levy Dalton.
I'm Erin Scala.
And here's our show today.
My dad is an interesting guy. He was a formula race car driver, a medic in the Vietnam War, and a playwright. He rides a Harley and only drinks Grand Marnier. In short, he's an all-around interesting guy, and he has some pretty incredible stories. In this dad tale, he tells a story about the worst and last day of his brief but wondrous career as a waiter. Dad, you once worked as a server in a restaurant one summer, didn't you?
I certainly did. I was working at the Boar's Head Sports Club in Charlottesville, Virginia, and I was a part-time server at that time. And Ferdy Bazine was the chef, and he always told me how to serve the French onion soup, which was in hot ceramic bowls, and he could pick the bowls up with his bare hands, but it was very hot for me. So when I took the bowls out to my customers that were in the center of this room during the lunch time, and she had a decolletage that would the world would recognize as very beautiful, and I spilled the French onion soup down this beautiful woman from Britain, and this French onion soup went down her breast. I thought, oh my God, a lawsuit. Oh, I picked up the iced tea and poured it down her and she went from hot to cold in 2 seconds. And I didn't know whether to pick up the onions and the cheese that were dripping down her décolletage. But her husband was very astute and escorted her to the bathroom as all this stuff was falling off of her. And I said, oh, I'm fired. There's no way that I could ever do this job again. And Ferdy Bazine, the whole place became quiet. And I could hear some people saying, don't get him to serve. And so Ferdy Bazine was poking out the swinging doors, wondering why everything was so silent. And I had another hour to go and serving people. And the owner of the whole place, the Boar's Head Sports Club, was fortunately not there. But I said, oh my, he's going to find out, and I'm a goner. So anyway, having talked to Ferdy Bazine, he said, well, you know, Ed, we enjoyed playing squash with you, but, you know. And the next morning, I came out in my running shoes, going to take a run around Edenham Forest where Boar's Head Sports Club was. And I heard this voice says, "I say there, would you like to knock up a bit?" And they were in their tennis outfits. And I jogged over to the husband and wife. And I said, "I was so sorry to spill all that stuff on you." He says, "Oh, it was a jolly good show, but you know, you learn, don't you?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "Would you like to play some Canadian doubles?" And I said, "Sure, sure." So he says, "Oh, I see you have your Adidas. They don't work. Adidas do not work." I said, "Well, that's the only shoes I have. I'll have to make them work." So we actually played Canadian doubles. And I learned their names, Mr. and Mrs. Pertwee. Pertwee. That was their names, and they came there every summer to see Charlottesville and enjoy the festivities in the Boar's Head Sports Club. They were avid tennis players, and I'm not a very good tennis player.
Or waiter.
Or waiter. Yes. And I could see that my future was not in waiting. I could see that. And I was not going to become a New York captain or a maitre d'. I was not going to become that. I could see that. So I went on to other things, but I will never forget Mr. and Mrs. Pertwee.
And they will never forget you.
I'm sure.
It's not enough to make great wine. You also have to reach the consumer that appreciates that wine. And that's where Offset is an incredible asset. Offset is an independent brand design and commerce technology company that connects with wineries on a human level to help them connect with consumers on a human level. Offset is based in wine country and staffed by creative strategists and technologists who are superb at helping create and evolve wine brands through visual identity and package design, developing the look, feel, and tone of your web content, as well as building beautiful and effective websites powered by their proprietary e-commerce platform, Offset Commerce. That's why leaders like Frog's Leap, Grace Family Vineyards, and Rain Winery already rely on Offset. Reach out to the brilliant team at Offset at offsetpartners.com. That's OFFSET. Partners with an S dot com. Offset is focused on the wine industry and can embrace the nuanced needs of your wine brand.
Emmanuel Lesenia on the show today of Domaine Jacques Lesenia. Hello, how are you?
Fine, fine.
Great to have you here on the show.
Thanks.
So your dad planted the vines in the 1960s.
Yes, my father planted the first vineyards in 1964.
And you're in the Aube, in the Champagne
yes,
district?
Yes, we are in the south of Champagne. Champagne is a big vinery region because it's extended up to 300 kilometers from the north to the south. And we are very close to the south.
And historically, it wasn't part of the Champagne region.
It's a part of the Champagne region, but it has been fight for a long time. And mostly when they decided to regulate the appellation, we can say that, I think, in 1927, they put the Aube department as a second region. So it was called Champagne from the second region, something like that. So they fight against that. So, but historically, yes, there is vineyards till the 13th century in the Aube. So it's not the problem, but it's a question of a recent history between Reims and Troyes.
And you're in an area of the Aube with a bit more of a chalky soil.
It's a very Mongeau is very special in Champagne because it's the only village to be alone. And mostly in the Aube department, the main region is called La Côte des Bars. It's in the south of Aube department. And this Côte des Bars is mostly argile calcaire. I don't know in English. And it's mostly Pinot Noir. Mongueuil is also in Aube department, but it's soil very close to La Côte des Blancs. So it's a chalky soil, which is exactly the same than the Côte des Blancs, but 15 million years older. A little different.
So your dad plants the vines in the 60s. How many growers work in Mongueuil?
In Mongueuil, we are 80 growers. 22 are selling champagnes, including these 22. We are only 12 to do our own champagnes from Mongueuil, or a part, at least.
And originally, your dad had sold to the cooperative.
Originally, my father, when he started, because they were farmers at the start, and because Mongueuil keep the appellation in 1927, and they decided, because the Grand Maison wanted to have grapes, they decided to make plantation of vineyards on this. So my father, my uncle, they started in the 60s. And first of all, to sell grapes to the Grand Maison. And my father started to do wine in 1970. And the first wine he was doing was called Vin Nature de la Champagne. It was a still wine up to the 80s. And in the 80s, he decided to produce champagne. One cuvée was a Blanc de Blanc from Mongueuil, from his parcel. We can say it's the cuvée we have, Le Côté, actually. It's the old parcel from my father. And the other cuvée, he gave grapes or juice to the cooperative, and he had back some bottles. So he had only one cuvée from Mongueuil.
And you originally weren't in the wine business.
No. I didn't want to work in wine business. That's at first.
So what were you up to for those?
No, years? I was working in a packaging machines manufacturer. I didn't want to work anyway in the wine business. I didn't study anything in wines and in vineyards. So I started to work for 9 years in this company. It was a small company who was growing up. And at the end for me, when we were 120, I was not very well in this kind of big company for me. So I was looking for a new project to be alone. I was looking to do something alone. And at this period, my parents had a lot of financial problem. And I said to them, no, don't sell the vineyard. It's a pity. So I want to save it. So my project was not natural wines or wines or selling wines or doing good wine, or I don't know anything. It was just a project of save the family company.
And what was your first run of vintages? Where did
I started in 1999 with my father. 2000 with my father. I started alone 2001, but my first vintage really alone is 2002.
Maybe you could walk us through a little bit. You already mentioned La Côte, which is a special old vine parcel, which you make a specific bottling that I really happen to enjoy. But maybe you could walk us through the different bottlings that you make today or that you have made in the past, just so I can kind of understand the production.
So in 2002, I originally had only two cuvées, Les Vignes de Mongueuil. Les Vignes de Mongueuil, the focus of this cuvée is the aperitif, activate the palate for the meal. After that, we vinify all the parcels separately. And I like very much Le Côté sensation, the wine of this parcel. So that's why I do a cuvée of this. So that's the two first cuvées originally. After that, I started to do barrels in 2004. So I make a cuvée which is called La Colline Inspirée, the inspired hill. Okay.
Because Mongueuil is a hill.
Mongueuil is a hill, yes, yeah. Right. And La Colline Inspirée is the name of a poem. But anyway, this cuvée is only made in barrel, like Burgundy sensation. I do a vintage every year, because I'm not considering that there is good vintage and bad vintage. It's just a human approach. I do a vintage every year because I want to have the traceability and the year in bottle. I do actually a rosé, which is a blend between Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. It's a wrong rosé. It's mostly a Blanc de Blanc together with a red wine coming from our old parcel of Pinot Noir. I was doing, but I stopped this Cuvée Les Papilles Insolites with also the Pinot Noir, which is a very natural cuvée only from Pinot Noir, with a small maceration in the press. But I take off the Pinot Noir, so these two cuvées, the rosé and the Les Papilles Insolites, will not exist anymore. And I start since 2010 a new cuvée, because in Mongeux we have a clos, like in Burgundy or
a wild vineyard.
Yeah, and we have a clos inside a property, which is named Clos Sainte-Sophie. And I started this cuvée, a cuvée from this parcel, from vineyards planted in 1968. I started a cuvée from 2010, which is not yet on the market, probably 2015 or 16, I don't know exactly. I started this cuvée because of the story of this parcel. It's a wonderful parcel. I love the wine from this parcel. And the story is, in the 1850s, 60s, and there was a very famous horticulteur. I don't know the name in English. Pépiniérist. Okay. And when Japanese wanted to open to the world, the emperor sent two young Japanese, in Mongeux, in the Clos Sainte-Sophie, to learn the culture of the vineyards, to learn to make wine, etc. And they stayed 2 years in Clos Sainte-Sophie in 1876 and 1877, and they went back to Japan in 1877 with 100 plants from vineyards from Mongeux, and they started the first vineyard in Japan from this parcel. So the most important vineyard in Japan actually is close to the Fuji Mount, and it's coming from Mongeux. So we do this new cuvée, and I want to play now. So I do a lot of small cuvées every year. Every year I do some different cuvées. So I don't want to have a range of cuvées, but I want to have also cuvée of the year, or I don't know the name actually.
So sometimes you've released a single vintage of wine, like in 05 and 03, where you've released a champagne from 1 year.
Yeah, yeah, every year.
Oh, you do?
Every year I do a vintage.
Yeah. Okay. And then you've also done a still wine at times.
Sometimes, yeah. We have done that one time in 2005 because the maturity in Mongeux is quite high for champagne. So I have done a Coteau Champenois Blanc in 2005. I have done 3 barrels. It was very good. And I have done that also in 2010. I have done 6 barrels because it's 12.5 degrees. But the acidity is very high, so I keep that in the end of my cellar, and I will sell them later. I don't know when.
Let's talk a little bit about how you work in the vineyards. You take over from your family, from your dad, and then did you implement any change in how the vines were being grown?
The culture of the vineyard is we have to be very... Enfin, it's difficult to say, I know this. I do a lot of experimentation also in the vineyard. I'm probably alone in Champagne to do what I do. The thing is, the main goal is we don't put anything in the soil. Either no herbicide, of course, no insecticide, no things to give something to the plantation. So we leave the plants alone. We leave the herbs, the grass, in the middle of the... in the middle of the rows, but the grass, we never cut it. We leave the grass growing up and we roll on it to because if you cut the grass, the grass is always growing up. So we leave the grass growing, and after we just not cut but roll on the grass, and it restitutes material to the soil. So it's a natural composition. So it creates a great competition with the vineyards. That means that the vineyards are not very high, but they are competing. Because of that, I don't have big yield, but it's a choice. But thanks to that, I never had any roast since 12 years. So I'm looking for a purity of the aromas of the terroir. So that's why I do this kind of method, we can say, in the vineyard.
And so then you press the grapes after harvest, and you use a fairly large wooden press.
It's a traditional press, yes. It's called Pressoir Coquard, it's the brand. Ours is dated from 1957. I still use that for one big reason, is we see what we do. Because in a modern press, you put the grapes inside and you put the program in, and after 3 hours, you have juice, that's all. But what we do is each press is different, because it can rain, it can be sunny, it's the afternoon, it's the morning, it's the temperature is never the same. We see the grapes, the skin, etc., the progression of the press, and each press is different. And we test the juice, we split the juice, or we blend the juice. It's every time different.
Some of the wines you ferment in stainless steel.
Yes.
And then some in oak. And sometimes that oak is from different places. What are the different decisions that you make in terms of élevage?
The goal is each parcel is separate. A part is fermented in tanks, and a part is in fermentation in barrel for all the parcels. And after the choice of the barrels, that's what you mean, is it's simply when we meet a winemaker and we test the wine and we decide, it can be a good combination, etc. And we make a lot of experimentation also with barrels. I have a lot of barrels coming from Burgundy, of course. It's a natural composition. Most of my barrels are coming from Fuissé, or the region of Mâcon. And I have barrels coming from Jura, with Savagnin, and also with Chardonnay. So it's interesting. And I have barrels coming from Cognac, which is a little bit special, we can say.
And what do you think that the Jura barrels or the Cognac barrels lend to the finished wine?
We have to say that a barrel, it's not a negative sensation. A barrel is a makeup. If it's a new barrel, if it's an old barrel, if it's coming from Jura, if it's coming from Burgundy, it's always a makeup. I mean, it gives always a sensation. The barrel is not completely neutral. The tank is neutral. You put the juice in the tank, it's a reduction area, but it's very neutral. The barrel is never neutral, which is interesting. So after, it could be strange to have barrel from Cognac or from Jura, but anyway, even if it's a new barrel, it's never neutral. It gives something to the wine. So using barrel from special region, we can say, it's just funny, but it's not so different compared to a barrel from Burgundy. It's also a combination if you take a barrel from Burgundy. It seems to be natural, but it's not.
And how have you found the different wines that you've made to age over time? What is the apogee of a Vindamangu or a Le Côté or a Colline Inspiré? How long should I be keeping them before I open them, or should I open them right away when I get them?
We sell all of our champagne only to wine shops in the world. Wine shops and restaurants, wine bars and gastronomic restaurants. That's the only market we do. We don't sell at the domain. And so all the bottles leaving from the cellar must be ready to be drink. So for me, all the bottles we disgorge, I wait a minimum of 4 months before leaving them from the cellar. And all the bottles leaving the cellars are ready to be drink. Of course, you can wait if you prefer. But for example, here in New York, if you if you buy a bottle, she has already, it has already 6 months disgorged. And after, the goal of each cuvée is different. The Vigne de Montgueux is a young wine because I want this aperitif sensation. And you can keep it longer because it's very fresh because of the shulk. But for me, it's good young also. So each bottle you can buy in wine shops, in each bottle is ready to be drink. From my point of view. But each test is different, so...
What do you see as the difference in taste between the fresher Vigne de Montgueux and the Le Côté? What does the older vines of the Le Côté bring to what the wine in the bottle?
First of all, the combination or the blend of the parcel is very important. Le Côté is only one parcel. It's the name of Lyodi, from the old vineyards of my father. And this, I do something special on this parcel because I keep bottle in the cellar, and we disgorge bottle each year to blend, to be blend with the wine of the year. For example, the one actually which is sold is 90% 2009, so it's mostly one vintage, and 10% bottle disgorge from 2006, 4 and 2. And it's always the same parcel, but of course it gives a little... oxidation or evolution of the wine on a small part, which is a great combination. And each time we do that, each time we will do a new fermentation in bottle, which give back aromas, etc. So it's a complex blend.
So you take a bottled wine and then you open it and then pour it into the tank that's not been bottled of the fresh wine of Le Côté.
Yes.
Now, a lot of people blend reserve wines to make a more complex wine, but they often do it from wines either in tank or in wood. Why have you chosen to bottle it and then open the bottle and then pour it back in?
For it's an experimentation first. I did this experimentation for 10 years. It's the minimum for this kind of experience because... The thing, it's because of two things. The first is when you do a fermentation, it's always give aromas. And in this kind of combination, for example, you have the 2002, it's already fermented in tanks first, alcoholic fermentation at the harvest. When we put in bottles, the Champagne method creates a second fermentation in bottles. It's like an alcoholic fermentation, a second. We disgorge, we put together with the 2004. In bottle, it's a third fermentation. We disgorge, we put together with the 2006. It's a fourth fermentation, etc. And so a part of the wine have got five fermentation, which is very great for the aromas. This is the first thing. The second thing is because of the bubble. Each wine, it can be... Grand Maison or a small producer, but each wine of Champagne is very fine because of the bubble. This Champagne method, this second fermentation in bottle, creates a very fine wine. And I decided to make an exaggeration of this, so recreate this, but a little bit more and more on a small part. So in this type of wine, as I described, there is five fermentation, and each time you create this fineness, so we go further into fineness. It's the goal. I don't know if it's a success, but it's the goal.
One of the things I've noticed about Le Côté is that the longer it sits in the glass, the more expressive it becomes. It takes a little time to show sometimes everything that it's about. Do you think that is a result of your production methods?
It's mostly because of the parcel. What we do is we try to catch and keep the aromas of the terroir. So it's a big sentence, but it's my goal is the terroir. It's not what I do. It's not the vinification method. It's mostly the terroir. So I try to be not up to the terroir, but under. So for Le Côté, for me, the main thing is the sensation of the terroir. After we have some experimentation like this and some method we use to go further in this expression, but it's just under the sensation of the terroir.
Are there other aspects of your method that you think bring more terroir to the final glass?
First of all, we use mostly tanks. As I described before, barrel is always a little makeup. The tanks is very neutral for the aromas of the terroir. You cannot mask something. And the second thing, when we disgorge, we never use any sulfur and we don't add any liquor in our bottle. So we disgorge everything à la volée without freezing the neck, like everybody. We disgorge à la volée and we don't add anything into the bottle. So we try to keep the bottle as it is from the start.
So no dosage, no sugar.
No, since 2 years, all of our cuvées are without any dosage. Before that, it was between 0 and 3 grams per liter sugar added. And now, since 2 years, I decided to leave the wine as it is.
What about the disgorgement? Do you use sulfur when you disgorge?
Never. No. We never use sulfur during vinification. We never use sulfur in disgorgement, in bottling, etc. We don't use sulfur during all the process.
So you sometimes blend 3 different vintages into the Vin de Mangou these days. And you have the blending regime that you talked about from bottle for the Le Côté. Did you know from the start that that's what you wanted to do, or were those developments that came over time?
No, it's always an evolution. The goal is most people in Champagne do a blend to have every year the same. But it's not my goal. Every year is different. It could be very boring for me to do the same every year. So, and also for people who drink, if you drink exactly the same from today and 10 years later, if you drink exactly the same, I think it's a little bit boring. So, no, we do evolution also because each harvest is different. Each vintage is different. So we can't do always the same. It's a pity thing. And we leave the wine very natural. So, of course, because of the harvest are not always the same, we have wines very different. I try to find a way for each cuvée. I try to follow this way, but that's all. But every year is different.
So let's talk about some of those years. I wonder if you could sort of recap for me your experience both in the harvesting and then in what the wines taste like from 99 till now.
We try to think that we know, but finally we never know. So each harvest, including the last one, 13, we discover things each harvest. So each harvest is really different. We can compare some analysis or some weather sensation or wine sensation to make a comparison between harvests. But I noticed that each one is a singular one. It's very typical. So it's always interesting anyway. Even if it's a bad comportment like held, we've got held in 8, we've got frozen. La gelée.
Like a frost.
A frost in 2003. So it's a big disaster when we had that. But it's always an experience because after you see the wine, the comportment of the wine on the nature, it's always very interesting. So we learn a lot every year. At the moment, my point of view is every vintage is completely different. It's never the same. After, I prefer some wines to the other. It's like everybody. Huh? Some people prefer 2005 than 2004. I prefer 2004 or 6 than 5, but it's completely personal. So we try to be very under the comportment of the wine because everybody can like or dislike. It's completely personal.
But what would you say the characteristics of the different vintages are when you taste? I mean, what would be the difference between 04 and 05 if you were to describe it to me?
The difference between all the vintages is mostly in Mongeux. It's mostly around the fruit, the sensation of the fruit. It's very, generally speaking, it's very exotic fruit and creamy wine in Mongeux. And sometimes it's very, very, very exotic. Pineapple. Sometimes it's much more a concentrate, like 2005. It was like melon, mandarin.
Sure, like orange.
Yeah. So it's always, we have different sensation in terms of fruits. After 2004 is a big harvest and the less concentration, much more typical in Champagne, I can say, much more straight, which is interesting also. Five or six, they are very, or two, 2002, they are vintages, very fruity, very, I like that because the typicity of the terroir is up.
When I've tried other wines from Mangu, from other producers, I've generally found them to be softer and more tropical than yours. Do you think that what you lend sometimes is precision and backbone to what can be fairly ripe kind of flavors?
It's difficult to say, but I try to do wine first. I don't want to do champagne first. I want to do wine first. It's a small difference. Most of the people, I don't speak about Mangu, and I'm not against that, but most people try to do champagne first. The bubble and the not too much winey. Some people in Mangu don't like what I do because they think it's too winey. It's too much wine. It's not enough champagne. And I agree. It's a choice. So I like that. I like the wine sensation. But it's a choice. It's not better or worse. It's just a choice. Most of the people in Champagne prefer to do Champagne with I can say the bubble up to the wine. And we do the wine, we put the wine up to the bubble. That's why we do a fermentation with a very low temperature and with a low quantity of sugar added for the second fermentation to have a small bubble under the wine.
And what about those yeasts that you use for the two fermentations? Are what kind of yeasts are they?
But the first fermentation in tanks and in barrel is completely natural. That means the yeast is inside the skin or the grapes, and we have made a lot of studies about it. And each parcel develops its own yeast. That's why we have to not put too much sulfur to make a complete liberation of this yeast and to have a very complex cocktail of yeast. This is the first fermentation at the harvest. This is at the moment. At the moment, we the 2013 are in fermentation. The fermentation, the first fermentation at our domain is normally between 2 months and 4 months around. It's depending on year. And the second fermentation in bottle, the Champagne Mitten, so we put yeast, a selected yeast, which is a selection of yeast in Champagne. It's the one we use is a selection of yeast in Aube.
So, do you ever, to bring out more of that wine sensation as opposed to bubbles, do you ever decant the wines or do you always serve them from bottle?
It's depending on bottle and it's depending also on what you want to do. I mean, if you want to take aperitif, you have to cool the bottle, I mean freeze the bottle a little bit. If you want to test the wine, you can decant it because you will lose a maximum of bubble and have the sensation of the wine. So it's interesting for the tasting. I prefer personally a big glass, like a Burgundy glass or something like that, not losing too much bubble. For me, it's important in Champagne to keep the bubble. So we must have the sensation of the wine, but also the bubble. So I'm not completely agree to decant our wines. We can do it. It's interesting to smell or to have the sensation of the wine, but I would prefer a bigger glass, not the traditional flute of Champagne. I don't like that, but a big glass of wine, and it's better to have a decantation into the glass.
How many bottles do you release every year? I mean, roughly.
We do around 50,000 bottles a year.
And have you changed that quantity to kind of develop more and more reserve wine?
No.
No. Same since 99.
It's around the same. It's depending on the yields. Mm-hmm. For example, 13 is very low yield. Probably it will be less bottles. It's generally between 45,000 and 55,000 bottles a year.
And what should we expect from the Clos Saint Sophie when it is finally released? What kind of flavor should I be looking for? Will it be similar to Colleen Inspiré, or will it be similar to Le Côté, or totally different?
It's totally different for two reasons. The first is the parcel. The parcel has this typicity. The exposure of Mongeau is surfaced. And Le Côté is East Sophist, and Clos Saint Sophie is East Sophist. Enfin, this part of Clos Saint Sophie, because I take only a small part of Clos Saint Sophie, which is exposure East Sophist. So similar to Le Côté. That's why I wanted to take this small parcel. I have a good sensation. And so it's very straight, very citrus, and very grapefruit or lemon. First, and after the vinification is for me a new vinification, because we put in fermentation in barrel. So these barrels coming from Cognac, from Jura, from Burgundy. So we do on this parcel, and we keep in barrel for 6 months, not more. And after, we do the blend into a tanks. And the Clos Saint Sophie is a vintage cuvée, only 1 year, without any reserve wine. And everything fermented in barrel, but only for 6 months. And after, we do the blend into the tank. So it's a small vinification in barrel compared to La Colline Inspirée, which is a longer vinification in barrel.
What do you expect the finished result to be? Will this be a wine for long aging? Will it be a wine for drinking?
At the moment, I don't know. Yeah. The best is to say we can drink young and we can keep longer. So, but of course, there is on this parcel, there is a high acidity coming from the soil and naturally because of the exposure. So we can expect that this cuvée will be a long guard. And also because it's only one vintage. When you do blend with reserve wine, you blend with old wines, which gives the sensation of older wine, which is easier to drink young. And with a vintage one, it's always only 1 year. So, because in Champagne, you have two vinification, one in tanks and barrel, and one in bottle, because it's a second fermentation in barrel, and we keep in bottles only in bottle. So we can play on these two components in Champagne. Here on Le Clos Saint Sophie, we don't play with the first fermentation. We do a short vinification after the fermentation, but we will play with a longer time in bottle.
You didn't go to winemaking school. Are there other winemakers or other writers that have triggered your own experimental thoughts in France or in other countries or in Champagne? Have there been people that inspired you to pursue the path that you have?
The thing is, when I started, my father was very natural in the wine. So I follow this way without any focus about natural wines. And the second thing is we have close to Mongeau in Troyes in the city, we have one of the first natural wine bar, which is called Les Crieurs de Vin. And I was customer of this restaurant, and I discovered the first natural wine, and it was a good experience for me because of them, or thanks to them. And I tried to meet some people from this shop, and it has been a way to follow, of course, but it was not a focus about natural wines or... It was not a marketing focus at the start. It's just because my father was doing that, and I just follow that. But with a parcel vinification, etc. But I go further.
Because someone else in your same position might have brought in a consulting enologist, but you decided not to do that. What led you to decide to say, okay, I'm going to make the wine my way, and I'll figure it out?
The thing is, in the wine industry, you have... Oenologist people help vinificator to do the things. And what I see when oenologist first comes to see me, they say, you have to put that, this product, or you have to do that, filtration, or I don't know. If you don't do that, you will have this problem. The curiosity say, if I don't do this, what's happened? It's very... it's very funny to test on the curiosity. My curiosity has make that I do natural wine because I don't put any products that they recommend to do it and etc. And each time we go further in it. The thing is, this oenologist focus is only because we are in a world of industry. And I want to stay in a world of artisanal things. And so industry needs, we short the time. We want to go quick. We want to earn money. We want to produce more. We decide to not produce a lot. I don't mind. We decide to not go quickly. And we decide to do by hand, which is completely the opposite of the general things.
So you've been there for about 14 years making the wine.
If yes.
In another 14 years, what do you think will have changed when you look back?
I really don't know. No, we will see. We never know.
Emmanuel Lasagna of Jacques Lasagna, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks to you.
All Drink to That is hosted and produced by myself, Levy Dalton. Aaron Skella has contributed original pieces. Editorial assistance has been provided by Bill Kimsey. The show music was performed and composed by Rob Moose and Thomas Bartlett. Show artwork by Alicia Tenoyan. T-shirts, sweatshirts, coffee mugs, and so much more, including show stickers, notebooks, and even gift wrap, are available for sale if you check the show website, alldrinktothatpod.com. That's ILLDrinktothatPOD.com, which is the same place you'd go to sign up for our email list or to make one of the crucially important donations that help keep this show operating. You can donate from anywhere using PayPal or Stripe on the show website. Remember to hit subscribe or to follow this show in your favorite podcast app, please. That's super important to see every episode. And thank you for listening.